Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Ask me anything. State pathologist Dr. Linda Mulligan is with me here in studio today. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Delighted to have you, Linda, with
Thank
us.
You.
As you can probably imagine, there's loads of listener questions coming in for you. You're going to answer them in a few moments' time. But what exactly did you study to become the state pathologist?
Medicine. General medicine degree as an undergraduate, and then I trained as a histopathologist in the hospitals.
Okay. Did you always want to work with corpses?
That, when you put it like that, it sounds very strange.
So
I always wanted to do pathology,
right,
for sure. And I went into medicine knowing that that's what I wanted to
okay.
do. But I kept an open mind and I tried as many of, because medicine is a very diverse career pathways. You can do a whole lot of things from public health and epidemiology right up to surgery and getting, you know, involved in very close patient management. But I always had an interest in pathology, always went back to the laboratory medicine and always went back to autopsy practice. So maybe that says something about me. I don't know.
No, not at all. But I imagine it must be a fascinating career. You know, what you see, I'm sure, on a daily basis, I mean, it's just pretty extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. No 2 days are the same.
Same, yeah.
No 2 days are the same. And it is always challenging, either personally or professionally. And it is absolutely 100% interesting on a daily basis. So that's what keeps me going.
Is it hard when you clock off at night, when you do get to clock off, when you go home to kick back and forget about what you've maybe witnessed that day?
I think I've built up a good support at home in that my husband knows not to ask too many questions.
He's right.
In IT. And my sons know what my job is, but you're always grounded when you go home. And of course, my dog, she doesn't know any different. So you just get greeted with all of this unconditional love when you walk in the door. So it isn't that difficult to switch off, but I think maybe I'm built like that and that's why I can do the job. So
087 1400 106, the WhatsApp number. Keep your voice notes coming in. But Declan has sent this question into you.
How do you determine whether an autopsy is necessary?
That's a very good question. The coroner is actually the person who determines whether an autopsy is necessary. And so there's a large number of deaths that have to be reported under the legislation, the Coroner's Act, to the coroners. And based on their assessment of the background information, the circumstances around the death and whatever information the Gardaí will give them, they will decide whether or not to proceed with a post-mortem examination.
So if somebody passes away, you know, in, we'll say, a hospital setting or in their home today, mm-hmm. when do you get a call?
We would only get a call in the state pathologist's office if there was something suspicious or overtly criminal. So, for example, an obvious homicide, or if there's something unusual about the death that couldn't be explained by a normal hospital autopsy.
Okay, so you're not called to every, that's a different form of pathology.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah,
not all of them. We do about 200 cases a year and there's about 6,000 autopsies done in Ireland every year.
Okay, Rosemary has this question for you.
Hi, I just have a quick query for Professor Linda Mulligan. I'm a great fan of Silent Witness. And I'm just wondering, is the programme true to life, in her opinion, as to regarding forensics and what is involved with it?
Okay, that's a great question, Rosemary. Honestly, I actually don't watch Silent Witness, but I was a big fan of all of the CSI programmes, and I did, growing up, obviously watch Taggart and Cracker and all of those good English procedural detective dramas. Some of them are very good. Some of them are quite true to life. I would say Silent Witness and CSI aren't true to life in that they seem to get results back, you know, DNA, toxicology, very, very fast. And the other thing that happens is the pathologists tend to be able to go out and question witnesses and people, and that doesn't happen at all.
So you aren't actually Jessica Fletcher then?
No, I'd like to be, but
not quite. Mark, is this query for you?
Hi, Linda. How does a state pathologist differ from a hospital-based pathologist?
Okay, Mark, that's a very good question as well. So state pathologists are trained as forensic pathologists. So we interpret trauma and injuries as well as all of the underlying natural diseases that might contribute or cause death. A hospital pathologist is based in a hospital facility and they are directed by the coroner in cases where the death isn't suspicious or isn't criminal, but the question around the cause of death still needs to be answered. And those are the vast majority of the autopsies that are done in this country.
Sarah has this question for you, Linda.
Hi, Linda. What are the main steps in conducting a forensic autopsy?
Okay, so that is it's a very involved process. We are directed by the coroner in the first instance to become involved. Then the Gardaí will give us a background information, the briefing. We may or may not attend the scene. That has decreased in recent years because the photography and videography around a scene is excellent. And so a lot of the time, as well, because of geography, it might be more efficient for us not to go to the scene. So we go to maybe one in every 20, one in every 15 scenes. So we might attend the scene, we might not, but either way, we'll look at the photographs. We'll assess the scene photographs, the background information, and then we will perform a detailed external examination and then a detailed internal examination. And during that internal examination, we'll take small pieces of tissue from the organs to look at under the microscope, and that's called histology. And we'll also take samples for analysis for drugs, and that's toxicology. We may do a post-mortem CT scan if it's been a traumatic death or a ballistics death, a gunshot-related death. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it all, we'll give the guards our preliminary findings to hopefully help direct their investigation. And when all of those investigations come back, which normally takes between 3 and 4 months, we will then put together our report, which will come up with a medical cause of death. And then that gets submitted to the coroner. And that is our evidence then in the coronial court or the criminal court.
Like, it's, you must have to have an interest, though, in crime and forensics and investigation, as well as the medical side of all of this.
Absolutely. You do. And the attraction to this job was the puzzle side of things, where you have to look at all of the different aspects and try and put them all together to interpret what you're finding at the post-mortem examination in the context of everything you've been given.
What happened?
So I really like it because you have the time to think about it. And we also have a very good peer review process in our office. So while you're not just dealing with your own cases, you're reviewing the other cases. So you get to see everything that comes through the department and you have that backup of the other experts in your department helping you if it's a difficult case or a complex issue.
087 1400 106, the WhatsApp number, if you have a question for Dr. Linda Mulligan, State Pathologist today. Jennifer has sent in this one.
Hi, Linda. What challenges arise when remains are decomposed or damaged?
So, Jennifer, those cases are probably a small number of cases that we deal with. The main challenge would be identification. And we would have to take either tissue samples or bone samples in order to get a DNA profile from that person. Obviously, detailed external examinations, etc., are important in those cases as well, looking at their clothing and belongings. So that can be a challenge. It is amazing, though, how much you might be able to tell, even from a skeleton. And we work very closely with an anthropologist who will come in and look at those cases with us. So you can often tell a lot, even though you might not think in a decomposed or a badly sort of disrupted body, you might not be able to tell much, but actually you can tell quite a lot.
I'm fascinated that you can do so much of your job by actually not even going to the scene. You know, that the pictures are like that. There's such reliance, I suppose, on that's what the guards doing the forensics there. But
well, the thing about the scene is there are now the Garda Technical Bureau, the local scenes of crime, Gardaí, they're all highly trained in examination of the scene. So the thing about the scene is you have to protect the evidence. And a lot of the time, if we're going to the scene, we're mainly concerned with the deceased person. And we're introducing another potential contamination source to that scene
it's limited that.
Yeah. And to be fair, when we have that body in the mortuary, in the controlled environment, in the better lighting, that's our scene and that's what we deal with.
Lorna has this question for you.
Hi, Linda. What type of deaths require mandatory investigation by the state?
Right. That is a very extensive answer to that question. There's about 40 different scenarios where a death has to be reported to the coroner, and those are the deaths that require a coronial investigation. They don't all necessarily require an autopsy.
So what? Give us maybe a few of the examples. So beyond maybe the gunshot, you know, they're very obvious.
They're the obvious ones, yeah. So anybody who dies and the death is unwitnessed or the cause of death isn't known, anybody who dies and they haven't been seen by a doctor within the last month, anybody who dies within 24 hours of admission to hospital. A lot of nursing home deaths have to be reported. All of the perinatal and maternal deaths have to be reported. So there's quite a lot of deaths under the legislation that have to be reported to the coroner for investigation, but they might not all need an autopsy.
Ailish has this question.
Hi, Linda. How do you decompress when you're not working?
Well,
watch CSI.
No, actually, well, I do. We all watch Netflix, right? We all watch it. We all have been watching our shows. At the minute, I'm watching The Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah, that's very good. Do more investigation.
Do you know,
The Beast in Me is very good now.
The Beast in Me we're watching too. And I watch terrible science fiction and other such shows. Yeah, Supernatural would be
Casualty or Eeyore, one of them's back on Netflix as well.
That's right. Yeah, I saw Eeyore back on Netflix too. But no, I don't tend to watch those. But I also watch a lot of sport. I'd be a big sport fan.
Okay.
Football and rugby and obviously walking my dog and walking out in the forest. We live quite near the Dublin Mountains, so that's kind of nice to get out and get some fresh air and some nature as well. So.
Sean has this question for you.
Hi, Linda. What type of cases are you required to investigate?
So as a state pathologist, we are called into criminal cases, so obvious murders, but we're also called into cases where there might be an unusual finding or the body's in an unusual position or potentially where another pathologist has started a case that wasn't initially suspicious and they found something that makes it suspicious. So unexplained injuries, things like that, they're the cases we get called in to deal with.
Have you ever been called to a case where you knew the deceased or the family?
When I was training, that did happen. And in those instances, when you do know the person or you have some connection with them, that is the point where you will go to one of your colleagues and say, look, I do know this person and I can't be involved here. And I think, you know, with most medical professionals and healthcare professionals, that's the case.
That is the case. Listener says, my daughter is obsessed with true crime. She's only 13, but says that she would love to work in forensics. So I'm wondering, what would you recommend and how would she actually go about this? She's very smart and bright. I think getting points won't be an issue for her. But are there any centres of excellence maybe where she could go and look at work experience?
Okay, so there's a whole lot of different areas in forensics. So forensic science would cover the DNA, the fingerprints, the ballistics and the trace evidence analysis. And if you're going to do in forensic science, I know DCU do a good program for secondary school students.
Oh,
so you could try and contact them and see if she could get into that. It's a summer school type
thing. Yeah,
we've spoken on it a couple of times. If you're going to go into forensic science, then a general science degree and probably a master's in forensics is the way to do it. If you want to do forensic pathology, then for sure you have to do medicine.
Yeah, that's the way you have to. If you want to, your job, you have to go down the medical route. Does Linda ever get emotional when dealing with a case? Are there any maybe in particular that stand out most?
Absolutely.
I know you probably can't go into the specifics.
I can't go into the specifics, but you do. And I think you're only human at the end of the day. And I've been asked this before and I always say it might be something really small. So you might be in a scene and then all of a sudden they have the same kettle or toaster as you. And it sort of suddenly becomes real that, you know, these were people living a day-to-day life and having their cups of tea. And so sometimes it's something really small. Sometimes it's, you know, they have a child the same age as yours, or there's something that you can relate to
in it.
Yeah, and it can be hard, but we have a very good debrief with our colleagues. They're all very supportive, and we also have trauma counselling in place if anything does particularly affect us.
You know, just given the gruesome nature of what comes across your table on a daily basis, you know, and some of the cases that have happened over the last decade or two in this country have been extraordinarily difficult, and no doubt for everyone working in all aspects of them, but Is that a reflection? Is that, you know, similar to other countries? Has violence got worse here? Is that
anecdotally? I think even over the last 12 years, I would certainly have noticed the cases are more complex. There's a lot more injuries that we're dealing with, and there seems to be maybe multiple deceased people involved in a case. And I do think it's an international trend. Okay. I don't just think it's in Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole lot of factors that can be
attributed to that.
Yeah, so yeah. I don't think I'm qualified to go into those.
But it is just, I suppose, when you look at the papers, you know, my God, sometimes you just think it's absolutely horrendous what you read, and this is what you're dealing with every single day. Linda, I could keep you for another hour myself even asking you questions. It's a pleasure to meet you, and thanks so much for coming in and give us a little insight into the work of the state pathologist in this country. That is Dr. Linda Mulligan. Thanks so much for your time on the
show
today.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.